Greetings, everyone. Thank you all for joining us on the World Peace Diet Circle call, April 16th, 2015. And we're calling from Maui, Hawaii. As you can see, perhaps, we've been juggling lots of balls to make this happen here, but I'm delighted that it's all working out. We just flew in and landed a little while ago, flew in from Honolulu to Kahului Airport here, and we rented a car and go over to this motel, and I'll be giving a lecture here tonight on the World Peace Diet, and got figured out how to get the Wi-Fi working in the motel room and get things, and then there was quite a few delays on the way, so we just sort of get things going here. But Madeline and I send you all our love, and thanks so much for your presence on the call. And if there are any comments, questions, or if you cannot hear me fine, then press *6 on the phone, on your phone, and I can go ahead and unmute you. That's the secret combination of *6 if you'd like to say something, and I can unmute your phone, and everyone can hear what you have to say, including me. All right, so it's great to be able to be with you all. Thanks to all of you for joining us. It's just been beautiful. We've been here for a few days in Oahu for a few days, and now in Maui, and heading to the Big Island in a few days for some lectures there, and then heading to Korea for about 10 days for some lectures there also. So wherever you happen to be, if you're driving or something like that, of course, keep your eyes open and on the road. But if you want to just take a moment and let's turn our attention within and just give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be together on this call and to be together in spirit. And also thanking, of course, lots of people listening to the recording later. So including everyone who's going to be listening to this in the future, you know, giving thanks, knowing that the ripples that radiate out into the world from our being together will be to bring healing and greater awareness into our world. And we give thanks to all of our co-workers, whoever they may be, helping to spread the message on this planet. There's such an urgency right now, I think. We're feeling that. I think all of us are feeling that. And one of the big questions I was hoping maybe to address a little bit today is that question of urgency, because we don't want to be overly urgent, I guess, is also a problem as well. So basically, giving thanks for everyone who's helping to bring this message to the world and all of us bringing our talents to bear on this vital subject of the routine mistreatment of animals for food and clothing and other products and research and entertainment and so forth. Yesterday, a lecture out at a place on the north side of the island of Oahu had a thing called the Fruit Fest, and it's basically people who are living primarily on bananas, I think. there was 250 people there, and there was about, the woman said, 4,000 pounds of bananas that they had purchased, and also some pineapples and dates and all kinds of mangoes, of course, and papaya and sour soap, I think it's called, and loganberries, different kinds of berries, things, all tropical kinds of fruits. And it was a beautiful gathering of people. I mean, they were wonderful people, it seemed like. And they came and got me, and I gave a lecture on the World Peace Diet view, and also led a meditation. And it was very interesting to see the intensity, really, of these they came from all over. To be there, from Australia to be there, from New York City and New Jersey, you know, from that area, and Seattle and other islands, of course, and people who are for the most part, I think raw foodists and not necessarily motivated by compassion for animals. So it was really great, I think, to be able to bring the message of compassion for animals to people who are primarily on what I think in many ways it's good. I mean, it's people are eating a plant-based diet, but very often it's got to be raw. And I think a pretty, you know, having a good amount of raw food is not a bad idea in one's diet. Fresh salads and fresh vegetables and fresh fruits and things I think are great. They have lots of life force, energy, and so forth in them. But I also think there's it becomes a food trip, and then becomes quite difficult for other people to relate. And I think the good news, of course, in all of that is that more and more people are realizing that a totally raw food way of eating is pretty much not a good idea. You know, it's just not a good idea to try to be 100% raw. There's no reason to be 100% raw, actually. It's usually just to say I'm 100% raw or something. It's just sort of a way of identifying oneself. But I think that's finally become accepted, and even among the raw food movement, that that 100% raw is kind of ridiculous. So so there's more, I think, very healthy talking about the environmental and the cruelty and the ethical dimension of animal foods, and that will help, I think, ensure that fewer people, because most people who go raw do not stick with it, and they go back to eating meat. I mean, that's basically what happens. So that's the situation. Anyway, we had a great time. I had a chance to swim in the ocean and give lectures and meditations and see the bright, you know, these young people, most of these people just in their 20s or 30s, and they're just great. I mean, they're really trying to change the world, and I enjoyed seeing that. That evening, we had at the Loving Hut in Honolulu, we had a gathering where people wanted to ask me questions around the dinner table. And that was very interesting because a couple of things. One was, you know, just to hear the different questions people were asking. But one of the questions was about the urgency of the situation. And so I was thinking, you know, I talked a little bit, we had kind of a discussion about that. And it's a major issue, I think, for all of us in this work of bringing the vegan message to the world. You know, how do we balance the sense of urgency, which I think is essentially a healthy feeling, a healthy awareness that, you know, we really need to somehow be effective in promoting a positive change because of the extreme suffering of animals and the devastation of the environment and the hunger of other human beings. There's just so many reasons to want to act, and yet that can also be really unnerving, I think. It can be, we can feel heavy, we can get aggressive, it can become counterproductive, because we're increasingly, I think, seen as being, too radical or unable to function properly and fit in, and you know, these kinds of things. And so, then I've seen a number of vegans talking about the importance, the fact that things are so urgent means that we should use means that are, I would say, decidedly non-vegan to attain our ends, because the situation is so urgent, because the suffering is so extreme, because animals are dying every second by the thousands, or by the probably, I don't know how many, you know, 75 million every day in the United States, translates to tens of thousands per hour, even a lot more than that even. So we're seeing, when we let that in, I can understand why people feel this. It can be an overwhelming sense of urgency if we really let that in and contemplate it. And I know what that's like. I mean, I remember at a certain point the excruciating awareness of, gosh, you know, I've got to do more. I've just got to do more. This isn't enough. And why don't people wake up and understand this? And and then getting really feeling like I'm not doing enough, or that there's got to be ways that will shock people to become more aware, and how far do we go in shocking people? So these are some of the questions I think our movement struggles with, and we're seeing, I think, a continual working through these questions. And I got actually a few messages from different people during the past month about the happy meat idea. You know, that's an ongoing issue and problem that some of the larger organizations, like, of course, obviously the Humane Society, to a lesser degree, PETA, and Compassion Over Killing and Mercy for Animals and so forth, emphasize the cruelty of factory farms, as if factory farms are the problem. And if we can eat food, animal-based foods that do not come from factory farms, that come from smaller, local, more regional, more sustainable, more compassionate farmers, so-called farmers, then we've really made a major step in the right direction. It's really not too bad to do that. And this, to me, has really opened up a huge doorway for much more abuse to be visited upon animals. Because it's not that difficult for the industry to advertise its products as being free-range organic, and to set up systems like Whole Foods has set up, grading the various levels that they confer upon their products of being humane certified. And this, of course, gives them a huge market advantage, bringing in massive amounts of money and making people feel superior to not only to other meat eaters, but really even to vegetarians and vegans, because they're supporting compassionate certified foods and supporting farmers. They're paying more money for these and things, and getting quite convinced, I think, that this is the way to go. And so we see that on the one hand. We see sort of on the other wing, we see more, I would say, in some ways, very healthy efforts being made to be more confrontational in our approach in a positive way, not an angry way. The Direct Action Everywhere movements that are growing all over the United States, and I think in somewhat in other countries now too, where people go into a Whole Foods or a store or a restaurant and just say, this is not food, it's violence, and talk about the animals involved and how they're mistreated, and just make a statement quite loudly, typically, and then walk out, and just sort of shocking people and presenting a statement. You know, that's something I remember I spent quite a bit of time thinking that would be a good thing to do. And I've met a number of people who do that regularly, and I have to say, I think that, you know, if it's done with the right attitude, you know, not condemning or blaming people, but, you know, in the sense that we are all on the same side here, and it's the culture. That's my big my big message, is that as long as we are being the righteous ones and seeing other people as unrighteous or bad and kind of conveying that idea, we're not going to be effective. And not only that, we're not really embodying the spirit of veganism. We're actually damaging the spirit of veganism, which is equality, and it's also non-exclusiveness, it's inclusiveness. It's looking at others, even if they're pre-vegan or non-vegans, however you want to look at it, as beings who have inherently the same wisdom and kindness and compassion that we have, and we're not any better than they are. We have perhaps for some reason been able to free ourselves from the routine violence that most people unconsciously are engaging in and voting for and eating and serving to the children and to each other. So we've been able to somehow see through that programming, but I think we all know that it's difficult to do that given the enormous weight that the institutions in our society have on us, especially when we're growing up as little kids, our families and relatives and so forth, and all the other institutions. So I think even though there's this tremendous sense of urgency, it's really healthy to balance that with a sense of enjoying life in spite of the urgency, or in spite of the sense of the tension that comes from a sense of urgency, or the sense perhaps of doom. I think some people have the sense of impending doom that, you know, we're it's getting worse and worse, and China and India, Brazil, other countries are eating even more animal foods than ever. The water supplies are running even lower in California and other places. The global climate change is getting even worse, and there's more conflict in the scenes in the international relationships and war, terrorism, and those kinds of things, and disease vectors are proliferating into new things. Antibiotic resistance, which of course is due to animal agriculture, seems to be at the point of rendering most of Western medicine completely impotent because of animal agriculture, and the prospect of mandatory vaccinations for people, and losing our freedoms, and the sense that, you know, as vegans we are sort of stuck in some way as a tiny minority in a much larger system that is more or less crazy, in a sense that doing things that we would never want to approve of, but we don't seem to be able to stop it. It's sort of like, you know, they're being in a boat and everybody's going in a certain direction that we know is absolutely going to be utterly disastrous, and it is already disastrous, and yet they won't listen to us, and so we want to yell even louder so they hear us, and somehow the louder we yell, the less they want to hear. So that can be one of the main reasons, perhaps, that people resist going vegan. You know, sort of intuitively at a deeper level, there's this sense that, wow, if I really cop to this, you know, if I really open to and agree that animal agriculture, that, you know, eating meat and dairy and eggs is devastating to health and environment, to animals, and to our culture, then that is saying that the foundation of our society is absolutely needs to be changed. It's toxic and unsustainable, and that is a daunting proposition for most people to admit that, because we identify with our culture so much. And when we identify with something, we don't want to criticize it particularly. And so what vegans do just by our presence in the situation is we create cognitive dissonance in people. I think it's cognitive dissonance and also affective or emotional dissonance. And by being living examples of people who do not eat meat, dairy products, and eggs, who are healthy, who are happy and well-adjusted, essentially, who have lives that have meaning and authenticity and so forth, we introduce cognitive dissonance. You know, what do you mean? Don't you somehow have some deficiencies, or some nutritional deficiencies, or aren't you a little bit kind of wacky? There's an automatic, the mind does not want to hold the two contrary ideas. You know, that's very difficult. You know, we just can't stand that. We will chew on things until we can get rid of the disharmony between our thoughts and beliefs. And so this is what we face, I think, in many ways as vegans. People will naturally do what they can to avoid cognitive dissonance because it's uncomfortable to hold two conflicting thoughts at the same time. You think one of them must be wrong. And so if we do accept that there are people who are living on a plant-based diet and they're totally healthy, And what do we do? You know, how do we deal with that? And one way is to say, well, they can do it, but I could never do it. You know, especially the most powerful way is to sort of try it a little bit, sort of half-heartedly very often. Going vegan, I tried being a vegan. You know, I went for 3 days and didn't eat any meat and dairy, and I really felt terrible. So, you know, it's not for me. You people, you have a right blood type, or you have something about you that's magical. But for me, it just doesn't work. I tried it; it doesn't work. And that can be sort of the gold standard, I think, of rationalizations that people can use if they want to keep eating meat, dairy products, and eggs. Very often, it's because perceived social difficulties, right? That maybe their husband or wife or their family or their relatives or at work or whatever it is, you know, there's a sense that being vegan, maybe they tried it for a while and it was awkward socially. So it's just such a relief to be able to say, I tried it, it didn't work for me. So leave me alone. You know, everyone's different. Everyone's unique. We all have unique physiology. We all have unique blood type, hair color, whatever it is, you know, physiological uniqueness. And that message of physiological uniqueness, unfortunately, is really hammered home by so many people. If you go online, I'm sure you've seen this, people like Joseph Mercola. Anyone who's selling supplements, you know, Mike Adams or Joel Fuhrman, even vegans as well, you know, like Gabriel Cousins, all these people, both vegan and non-vegan, if they're selling supplements, what I found is they will typically always emphasize that we're all nutritionally unique, so therefore you need to buy. You need to know your profile or what, you know, you maybe need some extra B12 or C or D or whatever, coenzyme Q10 or whatever it is. And we have it just for you, you know, that idea. So it's very easy, unfortunately, for people to rationalize their behavior. And since people who are eating animal foods are in the overwhelming majority, then there's no, that makes it super easy and very difficult for vegans to be taken seriously at all. Yeah, if people want to avoid cognitive dissonance, they're able to do that. So I think it's, you know, as vegans, it's just important to understand that this is the situation we're in. And again, if we come across as being strident or antisocial or as being is having an agenda to convert them, because nobody wants to be converted. They want to come to their decisions on their own, then this just reinforces and makes it easier for them, for the cognitive dissonance to disappear. They can just say, oh, those vegans are crazy, or they have an agenda. They don't really care about people. They only care about animals, you know, the kinds of things we hear. So this is what our movement, I think all of us in the movement of just basically trying to live a life of kindness and compassion and share these ideas with other people and be effective in our advocacy, we have to understand cognitive dissonance and emotional dissonance, you know, the feeling underlying cognitive dissonance, the sense of guilt, I think is really what it is, the sense of remorse that what I'm doing is causing suffering. And how do we help people deal with that? You know, I mean, some people, I think, feel this naturally more than others, a sense that I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing. I'm hurting others, or I'm taking away from others, or harming the earth, and so forth. And they'll actually change their behavior because of that feeling that they don't want to do that. And other people, it seems, don't have that very much. They seem to be just fine. Eating animal foods and knowing that they're being killed doesn't really bother them. And I just the other day, actually, we were up at Harbin near where we live and gave a lecture, and this woman, sort of in the question and answer time, she really stated that very strongly, you know, that she tried being a vegetarian and that it didn't work for her, and she knows that when she buys meat from farmers that are treating their animals well, that is just fine. You know, they have a good life, and then they're slaughtered humanely, and so I responded and did the best I could to not let her get away with that kind of thinking. And it was interesting because I, you know, she was with another person, and the other person was a man, you know, maybe her partner or whatever, and he seemed very interested in listening very intently to everything I said, to do the best I could to have a question that way of thinking and the inherent suffering that is involved. And there's quite a few things we can say, you know, when we hear these ideas, and maybe I should share a few of those. But she, it was difficult. She was sort of just looking anywhere but at me as I was talking and trying to just not hear what I was saying. I think she felt very threatened because she's also a nutritionist, you know, and so she had a kind of a professional stake in this as well. Very often the people, it's an old Zen saying, you know, Zen mind, beginner's mind, that the mind of the expert is, you know, the hardest one to ever achieve enlightenment or awakening or any sort of new dimension of understanding, because the expert, in the mind of the expert, there are very few possibilities. They think they already have everything figured out. And the whole idea in Zen, and I think this is true for any spiritual path at all, the whole idea is to cultivate a beginner's mind where there are many possibilities, where we're not so sure about everything. And so we're more open to learning. And we're, the word is teachable, I guess. You know, we're able to hear something and take it in. And then, if we have cognitive dissonance, then we, instead of just rejecting it outright, we maybe question what's already in the bag of tricks we have stashed away that was injected into us by our culture, of course, the mentality of using animals and all of that. So ultimately, I think, as I keep saying, and I said this the other day, yesterday, actually last night at the restaurant, I think the sense of urgency needs to be tempered with a sense of grace and a sense of gratitude that and I've been able myself to rise up above the level of conditioning enough to question eating animal foods and to go vegan and to be making an effort to understand this at a deeper level and bringing this message to others. And right there, right then, just that itself is a foundation for gratitude and joy and the sense of being able to look forward to another day on this beautiful planet to bring this message to help chip away at this gigantic monolithic mountain of denial, really, that is in the middle of our society, and just keep chipping away at it, and to contribute the unique gifts that I have to helping people awaken. And I think underlying that also is the sense that this, you know, enormous and monolithic cultural denial and the violence inherent in animal agriculture and the way it reduces our capacities intellectually and creatively and so forth to really deal with our problems. But this may not be as deeply ingrained as it seems to be, that there may very well be possibilities of people transforming away from this behavior and this way of being. Because I think it's important to remember that veganism is two things. You know, it's behavior. We're actually, and that's what's so beautiful about it, I mean, we're actually not picking our walls and paying for meat, dairy products, eggs, and products tested on animals, and wool, and silk, and leather, and all. Mind. It's a state of consciousness. It's a way of being in the world that underlies that behavior. A way of being of giving others, as best we can, a sense of you know, showing towards them and sharing with them a sense of kindness and caring and respect, and not living our lives as if we're entitled to whatever we want, but rather realize and have a feeling, a cultivated feeling for respecting others not only human beings, but animals as well, and that this is in complete alignment with all of the wisdom teachings of all the world religions, and has also been basically declared, I think, by everyone that we respect for their spiritual wisdom as being the pathway to happiness. This is the pathway to self-transcendence, to spiritual awakening. You know, I taught comparative religion classes for quite a few years back in the late 80s, and it's fascinating to read the experiences and the expressions of the sages and saints and gurus and yogis of all the different world religions, and how as they awaken, they never, ever, through this awakening process, talk about how miserable life is, or they may talk about how miserable life is if I'm only trying to accumulate things for myself. They very often say that, but the underlying expressions of awakened understanding are always joyful, celebratory, being delighted at the beauty of the universe and the grace of the infinite love that is the source of all life. You know, the sense of being free from delusion and from the imprisoning emotions that cause unhappiness, and understanding the underlying joy that is the source of life. You know, this basic sense that life is so good and we are so happy just to be alive. And come on, everybody, you know, lay down your weapons, lay down your instruments of accumulating wealth, and lay down your ideas of domination and exploitation of each other. You know, when you're doing that, you're to be pitied. You're not getting anything that's ever going to last. And very often there's a warning involved that and at the end of this life, when you take your next life, it'll be a result of how you acted in this life. You know, so there's a sense of continuity, of seeing the larger picture, sense of not, definitely not harming others for one's own benefit, but that actually is the doorway to suffering that never ends. So, I think, you know, understanding that, this sense of urgency about what's happening on this planet, it can begin to be seen in perspective. You know, and one of the things I've been saying quite a bit lately is the idea that we're only here for a few years, to use these few years that we're here as well as we can, not to prove to others how right we are and that kind of thing, but to put our attention on helping to bless others by sharing our understanding in a way that they can respond to. And I think that really takes less being right and much more listening to people and really letting them know that we are listening to them, that we do care about their ideas and their approach. And I think, you know, even myself, for example, after 35 years of working at this, I'm keenly aware that I could always do better. You know, that even after 35 years of struggling with these, you know, with being a more effective advocate, I feel like there's always room for improvement. Some of you have heard me talk about this poem by Walt Whitman. I think it's in Song of Myself. He says, "I and mine, people like me, convinced not by arguments, we convince by our presence." You know, it's like that we convince by our presence, not by arguing, not by saying, not by knowing just what to say in any situation. That's really not the point. And this, you know, unfortunately, right now in the whole vegan movement, there's quite a lot of emphasis on people knowing what to say when, and you know, that kind of thing. I think there's a place for that. You know, to have good responses that are provocative. But I think our intuition is so important. Cultivating our intuition, developing the capacity to tune into the individual and facing us with a group of people, you know, that we're talking to, and delivering something perhaps fresh or something that just seems to be appropriate for that situation. It may not make sense logically, but we may find we're just drawn to respond in a certain way and to sort of get out of the way of ourselves in terms of trying to always think things logically and respond with our heart in a way that we plant a seed and plant the seed effectively. And that it may not be so much what we say. I think very often it's much more how we say what we're saying, how we respond to, as I've said, you've heard me say many times, I think it's very important not to use statements that, in a sense, challenge the other person in a way that they feel that they're being blamed, because very often that will cement them in their belief that vegans are somehow not worth listening to because they're just kind of crazy. They're too judgmental, and I'm not going to do that. But to, if we can, to talk about ourselves. I think that's one of the most helpful things, because that automatically diffuses the situation. If I just say, I know, I understand what you're saying, and from my own point of view, I've discovered over the years, I used to think the same thing, but I realized as, through my life journey here as a vegan that, and then just talk about whatever it is, that in the Bible, there may be things that appear to give the idea that it's fine to eat animals, and yet I found for myself it's not necessary, and the animals definitely do suffer. We are aware of that, and the teachings are to reduce suffering, and so I found for this for myself that it's a great way to live. And that way we just plant the seed and then let go, and as the Bhagavad Gita says, just not be attached to the fruit of our actions, and do the best we can in each moment. And then a sense of urgency, I think we begin to realize, you know, there is a sense of urgency. But in many ways, that can be a fuel for us to work on ourselves even more. I think the best people, I don't like to say best people, but I think the people that perhaps are most effective in bringing the vegan message to the world are the ones who work on themselves most diligently in terms of rooting out attitudes that are competitive or judgmental or angry or hate or spiteful or cynical or critical, and instead shower people with a sense of love and understanding and beckon them to join something that is a celebration of life that is going to help everyone. And I think, for example, the Cowspiracy movie that Kip Anderson did, which, he, as you all know, he went through the World Peace Diet Facilitator training prior to doing that, and there's this real sense of him just telling his story, not in a judgmental way, but just realizing these different things, and that plants seeds very effectively. And I think all of us, as we contemplate our lives and the kind of situation we find ourselves in and how we can be a more effective coach or advocate for animals, either in a big way, whether we're talking to, you know, tens or hundreds of people, or just in, you know, one-on-one situations, we can learn to channel the sense of urgency in a way that we're not focusing it on the people themselves so that they feel so put on the spot, but that we're focusing more on ourselves, that we embody this in all of our actions as best we can all the time. And I think then we'll find, as Gandhi kept saying, you know, we'll find ourselves being the change we want to see in the world. And that's really the way, when we have a whole movement of people that are actively, on an inner level, becoming the change they want to see in the world, authentically really working on that and not so much seeing it merely as handing out flyers. Handing out flyers is fine, but I think getting the message to people, living this message in a deeper way, is the way that we're going to become most effective at actually creating flyers and creating situations and creating artifacts like movies and blogs and books and conversations and so forth. A culture is the result of its conversations, basically, and so the quality of our conversations with ourselves and with other people, I think, is really something that we can take responsibility for ourselves. We can change that for ourselves. We can't really change other people. So to realize that our life here is quite brief, to spend it as best we can on purifying our awareness, and as part of that, to bring this message to other people, And I think in the big picture, there's no avoiding that, that ultimately we cannot be more effective in bringing the vegan message to the world than we are effective in bringing the vegan message to the people who are close to us in our lives, to the way, there's a saying that I've seen, and I wonder what you think about it, if you think it's true, but the saying is, the way someone does one thing is the way they do everything. That basic idea, you know, just the way I hang up a towel in the bathroom after I wash my face is the way pretty much I'll do everything in my life. And so to understand that and do everything, as was it Gandhi or Mother Teresa, somebody said, do everything with love. We think we want to do big things, but if we do lots of little things with love and awareness, that leads to doing great, you know, so-called great things, which who knows what's really great. Things with awareness and love and attention, and we become automatically, I think, trained. It's really a lot about training ourselves, and this training or taming of our consciousness to bring ourselves into alignment with what veganism is all about, which is a clear awareness. A sense of being honest and responsible for what I have control over, which is my own emotions and actions and thoughts and words, and then bringing as best I can my ability to bear witness to the suffering of animals and people in a way that is not in some way directly criticizing other people, but actually showing that all of us have been wounded by being born and raised in this society, and by being wounded in the, you know, even as vegans, we're not in any way perfect people. We have lots to work on. So the sense of urgency, I think, is healthy, but I really want to encourage everybody to be careful not to take it all too seriously. We very well may be past the point of no return. I mean, there are some scientists who proclaim that it's too late. You know, it's already, the feedback loops have happened, and we're not going to make it. No matter what we do, you know, the planet's going to, everything's going to break down. And of course, who knows? I mean, I personally don't agree with that, although I can see where there are people who might. But in any event, in the face of that, even if that were true, the ultimate sort of urgency, I guess, or maybe that's beyond urgency, because then there's a sense, well, why bother? But I think, you know, or if it's, you know, it's going to be like that unless we change everybody tomorrow, you know, that feeling. But to realize that, you know, this planet was already, the human culture when we were born was already deeply mired in animal agriculture and the attitudes of violence and exploitation and domination of animals and other human beings. And we were born into it. We were wounded by it. We've been able at least to transform our consciousness enough to be able to be advocates for vegan living, compassion for everyone. And that's right there already something to be grateful for and to just develop the capacity. And remember that if I want to harm others, even if it's people who, you know, are bad people like ranchers or feedlot operators or slaughterhouse owners or I don't think anybody thinks the workers are, I mean, the workers very often actually are demonized, but they're often obviously victims as well of the system. But anyway, that temptation that we have to demonize or to hate or to want to attack or harm or destroy slaughterhouses and factory farms and fur farms and things, that all comes from an underlying mentality of exclusion. And the only reason we can do what we're doing to animals is because of the very same mentality of exclusion. And what veganism is a mentality of radical inclusion based on seeing that the same means is not going to give a different end. So to purify our consciousness, to work as hard as we can, to be, as Gandhi said, the change. All right, so I'm going to stop right here, and I see that there are, I know our friend Susan Pitcairn, you raised your hand a long time ago, Susan. I think it was because the phone died and you wanted to let me know. But over the, if you're still here, which I think you are, if you have any questions, because I know I was a little bit addressing some of your questions, but you sent an email to me, and there was one other thing you brought up about grain. So I don't know. I'll go ahead and see if you want to talk about that a little bit here. And then just pause here also and just tell everybody if you'd like to I'd like to open this up now. I sort of said my main piece. And to any thoughts or questions or comments you may have about any of these things or for each other or anything about what's going on in your own life in terms of animal agriculture and veganism and the transformation of our society and any either ethical or spiritual or health-related questions you may have. There's really so much we can learn. And I feel, Madeline and I are in this kind of amazingly wonderful position where we're continually meeting people and learning so much. And I wish I could just share everything that I know somehow. It's just like just today, we were on the way to the airport, and we were being driven by he's he lives in Honolulu, and he has been a vegan. He went vegetarian like in 1950 something or other, and he became a vegan in 1964. So he's been a vegan for 51 years. This guy, and he's 83 or 84, I think 85, somewhere in there. And so he's so vibrant, he's so alive, he's telling us how his latest thing is parachute jumping, and he's jumping out of airplanes, running, and he's learning, he's taking lessons in paragliding, and I guess he did a lot of hand gliding, now he's doing paragliding and these gliders. We went up there, that's where we were, at the fruit festival in northern, the north side of Oahu. It just happened to be right next to this little airport, which is so windy, and these people go out and do gliding and parachuting. But to hear him talk about the movement and his life and so forth, and some of the things he learned, and one of the things he really emphasized, which I'll just pass it along, is the importance of making sure you're getting enough vitamin B12. Because he said that happened to him at one point. He said after 4 years of being a vegan, he just didn't feel very good, and he's a doctor. So anyway, he checked his B12 level and it was low. And so he started taking, B12 tablets a little bit, like he takes 500 micrograms, a day. And he said, that's overkill, he says, and that's very cheap. I mean, they don't cost hardly anything. But he said, he thinks it's a really good idea just to be on the safe side. And so he recommends that to everybody. And I said, what kind? And he said, just make sure it has cobalamin in the title. It can be either methylcobalamin or cyanocobalamin, but just make sure it's cobalamin. So that was a little tidbit that I shared. But it was neat to see not only how sharp he is and how he's living such an adventurous life at an age when a lot of people are just sort of slowing down and barely hanging on, and to see how much he loved the World Peace Diet message. He's also the fellow who videotapes the lectures for the Vegetarian Society of Hawaii, and he was spent all day yesterday, editing my lecture. He was talking about, how wonderful it was to hear these ideas about the devastation of animal agriculture to our society, to our culture, how true that is, and so forth. And so it should be up in just 1 or 2 days, actually. He'll have it up, he said, by the end of today. And he puts in, he really does a nice job when he edits the lectures. He puts in, he got a bunch of photographs somehow off the internet, and he's mixing them in with lecture and all that. Anyway, here he is, 85, 4 or 5 years old, contributing so much to the people's lives. And we stayed in his, he has a spare apartment on the top floor of a condominium, I guess it is, looking out over Waikiki Beach. So that's where we were. And we just felt very blessed to be able to meet him and so many other people. I mean, it's this continuous thing. And I know a lot of you, of course, are running into amazing people all the time, and you are amazing people yourselves already, the people are running into. So good for you. And another one of these amazing people is Susan. And I was just going to say, I was going to unmute your phone, Susan. Susan, we had a chance to stay with in Sedona not too long ago. And I'll go ahead and unmute your phone, Susan. If you don't have any question, then we'll just mute it again. But if you do, okay, so here we go. Are you there, Susan?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Yep,
okay,
absolutely.
Good. Okay. Yeah, well, hi, Will.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to hear yours, too, and to be on the call. And what you said earlier about kind of the cognitive dissonance issue is probably addresses somewhat the issues I keep running into with people, particularly we seem to know a lot of people who are really, you know, seem like they don't have the beginner's mind on health, and they have a lot of ideas, as many people do these days, you know, all the health gurus and so forth. And so either it's that they need the protein or they can't stand the grain. I mean, that's a big one I hear a lot, actually, is I can't tolerate grain. And I don't know how much of that is just kind of propaganda and belief, and how much of it, maybe there's really something going on, perhaps because of, you know, the tampering with our grain supply with GMOs and glyphosate,
uh-huh.
Those kinds of things. So it's I feel like it's kind of can get a little bit arrogant for me to kind of like say, well, you know, you're just that's just BS, you know, or to think that, whether or not I say it, and you know,
right.
I don't really know. So I need to find a way to come at that kind of compassionately and yet effectively.
Right. Well, you know, one thing I would say, again, like I was saying earlier, is to make sure you use I statements and not you statements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the idea, I think, to just reflect on that there has been a lot of pressure, I would say, in the public conversation, basically in terms of health, against grains, against wheat, especially. The paleo diet is pretty anti-grain. In general, the meat, dairy, and egg industries are anti-grain. They think the grain should be just fed to the animals, and then you eat the meat and dairy and get the goodness that way, so to speak. So, you know, I definitely can understand why you might feel that grains are not good for you, because, you know, I myself, just looking at the a lot of the media is it's very clear that there's a lot of criticism or questioning of grains, and yet I also realize that grains have been the foundation
mm-hmm.
of the greatest cultures the world has ever seen. And when I've traveled to other cultures, seeing people living on rice, on corn, on barley and oats and rye and wheat and so forth. This is what the great civilizations basically lived on, and that's what everybody ate. Potatoes also, and sweet potatoes. Basically, we human beings, the research I've done, we're designed to run on starch. That starch is the basic fuel. It's the most easily breaks down to glucose in a clean way, and this is what people have eaten. But there sure is an awful lot of money in people not understanding that.
Just to role play this, what I would hear. Okay, let's hear what you say.
Yeah, good.
Well, my naturopath, though, you know, I have diabetes, and that my I'm avoiding the grains and the sugar and all that stuff, and I just basically eat meat and vegetables, and I'm in, you know, it's in much better control. I'm doing better. I mean, that's what he tells me to do.
Right. You know, it's great that you're feeling better with that, and I think the underlying thing to be aware of, though, is that at least for me, I've discovered, you know, myself, I've been eating just a vegan diet now for many years, and there's millions of people doing this, that we have just such a small, not only a smaller footprint in terms of water use, you know, eating animal foods requires enormous amounts of resources, but also there's ultimately no way for any animal to be killed that's not going to be causing fear and terror. And to be causing that and to be eating that is something that I noticed myself is downplayed in our society. It's something that we just do. You know, it's kind of like back in the 1800s, people owned slaves and would beat them, but it was always considered just fine to do that. And I myself realized that one of the most beautiful things about moving to a plant-based diet is that it frees up the conscience and the creativity of my own mind so that I'm not...
Well, I'd like to do that. You know, that sounds great. I'm fully in accord with the ideas and philosophy behind this. But, you know, my body, I can't do it. I mean, when I was eating those things, the grains and stuff, that I just didn't do well. I didn't feel well. And now that I'm eating meat or more meat or just getting rid of the grains, I feel better. What do you say to that?
Right.
Mr. Noel.
Well, you know, the thing is, so, you know, can you say a little bit more about what was actually not, what you were actually eating when you were eating more grains? And what you were vegan diet? Or
I've heard people say this. I was eating organic. I tried every kind of grain. I even tried quinoa. I can sometimes do a little bit of quinoa, but I mean, I tried organic. I just am not able to digest it. You know, it's just a...
How about potatoes or sweet potatoes?
Well, my doctor says that's the most highest glycemic thing. I shouldn't have that for diabetes. That's got more higher on the glycemic index than a cookie.
Right, but have you also noticed that, you know, I read the other day, actually, that the doctor who invented the glycemic index, the Canadian doctor who invented it, has said that the best way to live is on a plant-based diet that's high in starches. So
really? I want that.
I think it's very important to look deeply into these questions. And I think also just to question the cultural programming that all of us have, you know, I know I sure went through it, of just discounting the suffering we're causing other living beings as if that doesn't matter. Because if I went to my naturopath and I wasn't feeling that well, and then he said, well, you know, you need to eat a little dog meat. I'll eat a little dog meat then. Sure, sir, thank you very much.
I'll go and
buy some right now. Would I do that? I just have to ask myself, would I do that, or would I ask for a second opinion?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the situation that in many ways we're in, is that we think it's pig meat or chicken meat or cow meat, and we don't ask for a second opinion, but I think we know deep down it's actually no different.
Mm-hmm. I think I might add also that there are other naturopaths and so forth that are vegan. So, you know, I think that's
right. That's the kind of feeling that if the person is at all open, then to recommend maybe a book like Starch Solution by McDougall or something like that,
mm-hmm.
The thing is, if someone is absolutely just going to fight you and mm-hmm. has a completely closed mind, then I think in many ways it's best just to plant a seed of mm-hmm. some, you know, talking about yourself and plant a seed, and then just let go and mm-hmm. you know, change the subject and work on and spend more of your time on people who actually have a little glimmer of hope there in their eyes.
Yeah, that's what I kind of think.
And you may know, but otherwise you tend to get, you might find yourself getting really, feeling beaten down and like hopeless and like nobody
mm-hmm.
listens. But just plant mm-hmm. the seed, let go. And there's a lot of people who I think are more open to these ideas than especially, you know, I know you and your husband, Richard, we know you're a veterinarian. I'm a veterinarian, so I know a lot of your friends probably consider themselves to be very knowledgeable about, you know, nutrition mm-hmm. and so forth. So sometimes That's what I was saying, that the experts are really something. And people whose livelihood in some way depends on animal agriculture, either directly or indirectly, are really hard very often. I mean, they anyone who's working very often, you know, like in a restaurant or as a chef or a cook or someone in a veterinary position, I think could be especially difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to just, you know, like what you're doing, I think is wonderful because you're doing a lot of work in Sedona, just reaching out to the general public, too.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the good news is that by having a captive audience for 3 hours, you know, when we recently had a meeting with veterinarians and going through all the major points, humane, sustainable, you know, and health, I think we got about two-thirds of them to say they're going to, you know, go vegan or try it out.
Great.
Yeah. So
wonderful. Well,
yeah,
that's fantastic. You know,
I
mean, I know it's key. You want to get everybody sometimes, but if you can get
right.
You know, that many, that you're obviously doing things very well. I mean, at least, you know, like you said, you have a captive audience to not overplay your hand so that they
mm-hmm.
feel like you're just jamming it down their throat.
Yeah.
But, you know, to really, you know, have kind of a light touch so that you bring in the ideas and use some humor and talk about yourself and don't, you know, just beat them over the head with it because sometimes you may lose them. But it sounds like you're doing a great job, really.
Well, I hope so. But, yeah, one person said that, you know, kind of like, well, you know, we didn't really hear the other side of it and so on, you know. somebody who's been a vegetarian and a vegan before and felt she had problems and stuff. But anyway, but, you know, she was nice about it and appreciative.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, making connections between other movements can be helpful. Making connections between the animal, you know, speciesism and racism, for example, because people consider themselves definitely not racist, or definitely they would never own slaves or whatever. But to just, you know, draw those connections between, you know, the fact that just not long ago, 150 years ago, we were saying the same thing about slavery. We have to do it to be healthy. You know, I'm a slave owner. To be healthy, I need to have slaves. You people, you in the North, or you other people, you don't need slaves. You know, but I need slaves to be healthy. To be economically healthy, I need to have slaves. And is that really a reason to abuse other living beings just for my health? Just to raise that, you know, just to raise,
mm-hmm.
not to ask that question of the person, but just to say, you know, I was thinking, you know, sometimes when I think about this, I realize that if, you know, if I had been a slave owner in the South back in the 1860s, I would probably be defending slavery because I need it to be healthy, you know, economically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of an interesting thought, isn't it? You know, just talk about it, you know, that I think about this. Don't ask that. If you ask that question of the person, then very often they're just going to react. But if you say, it's an interesting thought, isn't it? You know, Is just health really a good reason to harm others? Isn't that happened in the slave period? And isn't that what people said every time they want to harm another? Isn't it really because they want something for themselves? And isn't that interesting? It's an interesting question. And kind of with a smile, you know, really, again, it's how we say things. Very often it's the sort of missing, it's hard to quantify, not just what we're saying.
Well, something else that occurs to me, you know, is when we're talking about this, is that the truth is that the way I feel about it, and maybe this is a good I statement to make to somebody like that, is that I wouldn't want to kill an animal under any circumstances unless maybe my very survival absolutely depended upon it. I mean, in other words, if it hurt my health a little bit, that's okay, because it hurts their health a whole lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, I'm willing to, you know, be a little less healthy and be a vegan, and then of course the great news was I actually felt better than ever.
And
you know, and you can talk about things like, you know, going through a period of cleansing and getting used to, you know, maybe your body needs to kind of adjust a little bit, and maybe you got to give it a little more time, and, you know, those kinds of things, and also working with the unconscious programming that we all have, that we need to be healthy and so forth. All these things can kind of just help, you know, instead of in a friendly way, to plant seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone does, you know, actually go vegan and they do it on their own, you know, not because you sort of, they feel like you force them, but they really have ownership of that themselves. And they really feel it and they got it. You planted the seed in a way that they now are vegan and they have ownership of that. They really did it for their own, out of their own choice, they really feel that, then they will be a far more effective advocate. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll really be up there probably spreading the word because they got it. You know, so I think the way to do it, though, is to just like many of you do. I think of Lily. I think of a lot of you who are on this call. Every time you find a way to kind of bring it in, you bring it in, and that's how we learn. You know, how we learn and how we kind of make connections, and we let our love shine to people in a way that they can feel that we're not just criticizing them and saying they're stupid and they don't care, but to, show a genuine interest in their situation, and also display the fact that we are so delighted that we are no longer doing that. You know, that's the part of the dance we have to do, I think. Is there anything else you wanted to chat about or ask about or talk about?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, one thing that in the talk that we gave that I think was probably helpful, at least with this particular group of people who are animal lovers, that's why they're veterinarians, was to kind of, like you see sometimes in movies where people are trying to bring out the best in, say, like a student in like a ghetto school or something, they challenge them to be the very best they can be. And so we said things like, we think that actually your leadership is really important in this, you know, and that you're, because of the field you're in, that we need to redefine the veterinary field and need to say that it really needs to be about serving the animals, not the person that says they're the owner, but just to really stand up.
So-called owners, right.
And just really encourage them to take leadership of this whole issue and stress that it's important. I kind of take that's one of the things I like about Howard Lyman. He seems to have a real oratory. He speaks to the moral point.
Right.
Important fervor.
Right.
And so forth, and I admire that. I'd like to get there, I think, more.
Right. Great. Well, thanks, Susan. That's a great point, you know, to make paint the larger picture, that they can be part of the evolution of the whole profession so that it's more about the animals, not just about the so-called owners of the animals, but really about them. And, of course, as part of that, you want to definitely move toward a vegan way of living, because that you're not going to eat your husband Richard says, I don't eat my patients. So, I think that's a really important point. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate your contributing. We have a couple more people I'd like to talk to. We only have about 15 minutes left here. So thanks for joining. Do you have anything else, though, before we go on, or is that still complete?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
Great. Okay, take care. Love to you and Richard. Talk to you later. Let's see. We have, I think, Grace has, you had your hand up. Are you there, Grace?
Hey, yes.
Hi, good to hear your voice.
So yes.
Maverick's
well, thank
right
you
too.
So much. Oh, hugs. Thank you both so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good to hear. So good to hear from you.
Yes, I've been listening, but I haven't had a worthy contribution. And tonight I was a little hesitant to raise my hand, but it feels like it ties in kind of with what you were saying about following our intuition and bringing up the vegan imperative. When the occasion arises, and so I wanted to ask your thoughts or feelings about this meditation group. It's a small group. I wanted to share the movie that you sent. It was really lovely. I've watched it a few times myself now, but it's the meditation group is not actually interested in sitting and watching for even less than an hour. Buddha and animals.
Are they going to watch Cowspiracy or what? I couldn't catch that.
The Buddha and Animals from the Dharma Voices for Animals?
Oh, Buddha and Animals. The Buddha and Animals film. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. By Dharma Voices for Animals. Right. Right. Okay. Good.
They don't
want to watch?
They don't want to watch.
Really?
really. But they are interested in a dedication of merit after our meetings, and we sit together and meditate and also maybe blessings. Like I have a prayer that I may share before I'm sharing a meal with others. But kind of that idea of dedication of merit. Maybe so this is like kind of a narrow thing, and possibly you want to send me an email, but I thought, I've missed y'all so much, so very much I've missed y'all. And maybe this would be something that would be of benefit, for all on the call to hear an idea of some way that we might close, our ceremony, bringing into mind the lives of the non-humans.
Right. So this is something you would do at the end of your time together at the meditation group where you are, like once a week or something like that?
Yes, twice a week.
Twice a week. Is it so they don't dedicate the merit already? They don't do that?
No, it's kind of it's not a very sophisticated or experienced group. We are like in recovery from maybe substance abuse or unhealthy self-destructive behaviors. And the Four Noble Truths seem to be a very effective way to kind of treat our problems of that nature. So,
right.
Yeah, there's not, and unfortunately, and I've actually sat with the, maybe the founder of the group, in California, and there's not a official party line, of course, there's nothing that they say on the official end about animals. So, the books that have been published, for our little fellowship, don't address it. But they're interested.
Right.
They see me being vibrant. They see me being happy and healthy. And I always do bring a vegan dish to share when we're going to dine together. Everybody always loves it. I never have leftovers. So it's like I thought I've invited them to participate here, just listening. And I've tried to share, but I have a sense of urgency, especially because, they already have some practice in abstinence. They're trying to lead a more noble life. It seems kind of like they would be the ideal folks for a vegan message, and that I could build a vegan community here in this fishing, hunting community, this town that I live in South Carolina. So they have an interest, but I don't know. And there's no magic words, right?
Well, yeah, persistence always, is helpful. And maybe, like you say, starting out with something very kind of simple, like dedicating the merit of your practice to the benefit of all living beings, at least opens a doorway to the idea of all living beings, and not just humans, but all living beings, everyone, all living beings. Yeah. And I don't know if you have a chance, I guess you'll have to just use your intuition, Grace, on how to reach these folks being an example of the delicious food and being a joyful vegan yourself, and maybe it's just being part of them, maybe just, how about just watch 10 minutes of this video and have a discussion, or I'm not sure what the possibilities or parameters are. Most of the meditation groups, I think, in the United States probably are not vegan-oriented. There are some that are, but probably most of them aren't, so. It's anyone who's listening, I'm sure there's a lot of other people who are involved in so-called spiritual groups, whether they're churches or meditation groups that are decidedly non-vegan, and how do we bring this message? We bring the message, and a lot of people just leave. They say, I'm not going to be part of this group if they're not vegan. But some, you know, it would be nice if you could, or if they really don't want to, then maybe there's a way you could create your own group that is vegan oriented and has a, and does a meditation, and maybe you'd find people joining you, perhaps, and that's another option, you know, just to do something that where you're really free to talk about it, and then just see how it goes, you know.
Oh, that's true. You know, the Lisa Levinson, I participated in the Vegan Spirituality Meetup in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That's great. But the other question I had was the meditation CD. I haven't seen it on the website. I tried to find it on, like, Amazon. Didn't y'all produce a new CD for meditations?
Well, the what's your question? The dedication CD, is that what you said, or... Or I didn't quite catch that. The
you had a CD of the meditation CD. Don't you have a Living in Harmony?
Right. Okay.
The meditation.
Our new CD, the meditation CD. Right.
Yes.
You're right. In all of the flurry, we came out in January, right before we went on a 3-month tour, and we just got back and took a breath, and now we're on another 1 month tour. We don't actually have it up on our website to download it. However, you can download it on iTunes. It is on iTunes. It's definitely on iTunes. And it's on CD Baby, I think, maybe also, but definitely on iTunes and other like online downloadable places, you know, probably all of them, Audible or whatever, should be available there.
Okay, I will have to become more tech savvy. Thank you so much, Will and Madeline, and everybody on the call now and forever. Thank you for all you do.
Bye,
guys.
Madeline, bye. All right.
Hi.
Thanks so much.
Good night.
And, okay, good night. Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of weird to be doing this thing in the middle of the day. It's only 3:00 in the afternoon. Well, now it's 4:30. And I remember now, Greece, it's 10:30 at night. We should begin to wrap it up here. I have Tara, you've raised your hand. I think it's Tara. You have something you'd like to add or anything, Tara? Are you there? Don't hear. Okay, so
I'm here. I'm sorry. I was muted on my PC.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Dad. Right. It's Tara. I just have a couple of quick comments. Grace, it's so wonderful to hear from you. And I don't know if they'll give you the opportunity to speak or to have your own meditative comment at the end of the class. But how about may all beings everywhere be happy, safe, and free? And that could apply to many different levels of all the people there and gaining freedom from many different things. That's just the thought, if they'll let you say those things. And
right.
The other thing I wanted to comment on, this has been really an interesting phone call, is that I spend most of my time around people who are not vegan, and yet most of these people know that I am vegan. And what I find is that there's, you know, really nothing that I need to say, because everything I do, they're looking to see how the vegan does it. You know, how does I don't mean to sound so impersonal, but many times it is. How does Tara the vegan react to stress or, being confronted? How does this supposed peaceful being react to that? You act at lunch when we're all eating meat around you? How do you react when I tell you pointedly how much I love this kind of meat or that kind of fish, and I look into your eyes, you know? How are you reacting? And I sometimes feel it's kind of cruel in a way, because I feel like they're saying things to see what
right.
my eyes do, you know, and maybe they are in a way. But the other thing is that it's a wonderful teaching opportunity. So at that moment, I'm practicing my walk, you know, I'm practicing my talk, and I'm being, you know, peaceful in the moment and exactly demonstrating peace at every moment.
Beautiful, right.
And so not saying anything, would be too much. So just being and doing is, you know, just enough, I think. And that's all I wanted to say.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very important. That opens up a whole universe of things. But thank you so much, Tara, for coming on and mentioning that. Yeah, I know it's something a lot of people, especially vegans, are working in or in places where they're surrounded by non-vegans. We're being watched all the time, aren't we? And that's a good point. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Thanks. Great. So I noticed that we do have. I kind of apologize that I didn't have a chance really to recognize that we were joined for a while. So I'm looking on the screen now. I guess they hung up. But Andy and Sven, who are living in Africa, I mean, they're African. He's African. He's born and raised in Africa. And Sven and Andy is, I think, from the United States, but they're doing a bike ride around Africa in order to help raise awareness about compassion for animals and interconnection of all life and so forth. I noticed, and so for them to be on the call, I think it's like 2:30 or 3 o'clock there, 4 o'clock in the morning. It's right in the middle of the night, and I know they've been getting on the call with Lily on the Sunday night World Peace Diet study group that she does every Sunday night, and I saw that she was on this call, but I think she's not. But anyway, I would like to just tell everybody that about them just briefly, because I think it's very inspiring. And if you go on your go online, just go to this website. It's Velo, V-E-L-O, like Velo is another word for bicycle in like French and German and so forth. Velo, V is in Victor, E-L-O, vegans. So it's velovegan.com. And they're these bicycling vegans, and they ride on these little, you know, back roads. They're not even roads. They're just animal tracks, really, in many cases around Africa. They've got brightly colored helmets, I guess, and hat gear and signage and so forth, and bring the message of veganism to the world. And our good friend Rohan Nilsson, who has gone through the World Peace Diet Facilitator training in Cincinnati. He actually flew all the way from South Africa to Cincinnati to when we gave the World Peace Diet Facilitator training there 4 or 5 years ago. And he's good friends with Andy and Sven. I think in some way he was instrumental in them getting a copy of the World Peace Diet and all that. But it's just wonderful to see so many different ways that people are bringing the vegan message to the world. And the World Peace Diet vegan message is the vegan message with a particular flavor, I guess you'd say, bringing an underlying cultural, spiritual sort of look at the whole thing. And I hope maybe next time if they come on, maybe I'll send her an email. We can hear a little bit from them maybe next time. Next time we'll be getting together in May. The third Thursday of May is May 21st. And so I guess at that point we'll be back in Northern California. Looking forward to talking with everyone then. In the meantime, please have, if you can, have a chance to look at the resources for the month of April. I love doing this every continuously. I never stop, and it's what I do. It seems like a lot of my time is create this thing. April resources, the two quotes at the top, I think, kind of sum up a lot of it. The first is from Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. He said, having abandoned the taking of life, refraining from killing, we dwell without violence, with the knife laid down, scrupulous, full of mercy, trembling with compassion for all sentient beings. Isn't that incredibly beautiful? And then 2,500 years later, we have Kaiser Permanente in March 2013. This is the largest health provider in the United States, saying this: healthy eating may best be achieved with a plant-based diet, which we define as a regimen that encourages whole plant-based foods and discourages meats, dairy products, and eggs, as well as all refined and processed foods. Physicians should consider recommending a plant-based diet to all their patients, especially those with high blood pressure, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, or obesity. I'm thinking, of course, of Susan Pitcairn's people who say they have to eat grains. But this is a huge study done by Kaiser Permanente. They don't do these things lightly. They spent many years doing the research on this, and they choose their words very carefully, and they say to all their, you know, recommending a plant-based diet to all their patients, especially with those with diabetes, actually, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and so forth. So this is, again, two sides of two aspects of one story, that the underlying wisdom of spiritual awakening and the underlying wisdom of awakening from the cultural trance of eating animal products and the devastating health effects of doing that. And again, Buddha said, having abandoned the taking of life, refraining from killing, we dwell without violence, with the knife laid down, scrupulous, full of mercy, trembling with compassion for all sentient beings. May we all take those words to heart. I think that what they're pointing to is an enormously liberating way of looking at things and feeling into life. With the knife laid down, dwelling without violence of body, speech, or mind, without abusing others, full of mercy, trembling with compassion for all sentient beings. Okay, and then just to notice here, we've got three videos of me in the last month, if you're interested, that have been posted online. One to Sacred Space in Santa Barbara. That was a kind of a specially nice one because we're just surrounded by Tibetan Buddhist statues and things. One with Dr. Shel Scheuer from Marin County. She's got a regular online video channel on wealth and abundance, and she wanted so it's called the wealth of veganism. And that came out really well too. And then my lecture presentation at the World Vegan Summit in Los Angeles is up here too. There's some great other things. Kip Anderson, Keegan Kuhn, on Democracy Now with Amy, what's her name? Democracy Now, Amy Goodman. And it's wonderful to see the vegan message by World Peace Act Facilitator Kip Anderson going out to millions of people through Democracy Now and questioning the whole violence towards animals as well as the water use of animals. There's also a link to Sven and Andy from South Africa, so you can click on that. And another nice article from Vancouver, British Columbia, summarizing the World Peace Diet. And some great things from Steve French. His blog is excellent. I highly recommend it. I have a beautiful writing called Not So Angry Vegans on the benefits of not being an angry vegan. And Veronique, excellent essay on zoophilia. And also called Bestiality, I think, is part of that. And Judy Carman, we have a brand new IDA project, the Animal Activist Hotline, which is sort of bringing in some of these principles of spirituality to to people who are animal rights activists. And a great article, actually, there's a Long Island-based magazine called Creations Magazine, and every single issue, they take a portion of the World Peace Diet and print it in their magazine. And so it's just great to see that coming out every month in Long Island. A really great hunting video, if you have people who hunt or you know people who hunt, it's excellent to let them see that. It really goes into the whole thing very well. And then I also have a thing with Lorena. Last month we had Lorena Muck on with us, and her email address, I highly recommend emailing her to get on her daily vegan information inspiration mailing. Our Pamela Zeman has the article about overbreeding of dogs and so forth. So anyway, there's and then there's a lot more. I mean, about organic farming and USDA killing 5,000 animals a day. Many other things that are very important to be aware of, I think. So I won't go through all of it. It's about three pages this time. But I think at this point, there's plenty of reading material for the next month if you want, looking for things to read about. We're heading off in a couple of minutes to a place here in Maui where we'll be giving a lecture promoting veganism, and then on Saturday an all-day workshop. And then to the Big Island, where we have about 5 events. And then in Korea, I think we have about 10 events. A lot of them are pretty big. We have, I think, 500 people coming to some of those events. So if you can hold us in your thoughts, we would appreciate it. And we'll hold you in ours as well. And we look forward to the next month's call. And maybe we can just close by joining together with the prayer that we very often say. We say this every day at noon. We have our watches kind of go off at noon every day, and so we, Madeline and I, we're together. We hold hands and we say, "Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere." So maybe we can just say that together now. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We give thanks for each other and for the progress that is being made, that we are part of an awakening on this planet Earth of human beings, so we can live our lives as we're intended to, celebrating our lives with compassion for all life. Much love to you all, and we look forward to the call next time. And if you have any questions or comments during the month, just let me know. All right, take care, and go forth and continue to be part of this wonderful transformation. Thank you very much. Oh man, I'm so cool.